Others like Melina. Others who'd wince when they saw me enter a restaurant. Others who'd turn the opposite direction when they spotted me walking down the sidewalk. Hi, Melina. Sorry to bother you. Can I have 5 minutes? Of course. I didn't bother with small talk as I pulled her aside and showed her the video of the purse. She didn't recognize it and assured me that if Lily had purchased that handbag, she was the type of daughter who would have loved showcasing it to her mother. There were tears glistening in Melina's eyes when I said goodbye. It was early in the afternoon when I left the nursing home. There was paperwork to do at the station. Reports waited for me to review. The city's budgeting process was beginning for the next calendar year, and I needed to wrap my head around the fiscal data Janice had prepared. But I didn't return to my desk. I drove home, needing a couple of hours alone behind my own walls to let my feelings breathe. Then I'd go see Pops and cook him dinner. Except time alone was not in my future. Griffin's truck was parked in front of my house. The moment I eased into the driveway, he stepped out of the driver's side and marched to my porch. Even with my doors closed, I could hear the stomp of his boots on the sidewalk. I dragged in a fortifying breath, summoning no energy for this fight. I hadn't slept much last night at the hospital, not only because of the stiff hospital chair, but also because I'd agonized over how to tell Griffin I was bringing in Briggs for questioning. Without a word, I joined him on the porch, fit the key into the lock, and walked inside. He followed me to the living room, waves of fury radiating off his chest. I let my purse plop to the floor by my shoes, then faced Griff, ready to get this argument over with. It would likely be our last. This was the end. Later tonight, when I was alone in my bed, I'd mourn the loss of Griffin, my rugged cowboy who carried so much on his broad shoulders. I'd miss him. I'd cry for what we might have been, probably more than I'd cried over Skylar. Even furious, Griff was handsome. His chiseled jaw was clenched. His eyes, hidden beneath that baseball cap I loved so much, were ice cold.
You talked to Briggs.
It was an accusation, not a statement. Yes.
Mom and Dad called their lawyer. He's to be present for any other discussions you have with my uncle.
That's fine. Briggs could have asked for a lawyer to be there today. Griff looked at the wall, his jaw pulsing as his nostrils flared.
It's all over town. I stopped by the coffee shop. Lila said she's been asked about 5 times why Briggs was arrested today. So now my family is fielding phone calls, having to tell everyone he wasn't arrested and it was just a routine meeting.
Goddamn, Officer Smith. He was the only one who'd seen me escort Briggs into my office. Not even Janice had been around, having taken a lunch break. Smith, that asshole, was going to learn a lesson in confidentiality first thing tomorrow morning. I'm sorry, I tried to be discreet.
Discreet would have been having that conversation anywhere but at the police station. Discreet would have been telling me first.
I did tell you first, I hissed, stepping forward to poke a finger in his chest. I came to you this morning. Do you really think I want to make Briggs look like a fool? He didn't answer. I'll take that as a yes.
I know how this town works. There's a lot of gossip.
Something you've explained to me many times, which was why the only person in the station was Officer Smith. I questioned Briggs in my office with the door closed. No one was present. I recorded the discussion, me and me alone. But I have a job to do.
A job?
Yes, a job. I tossed up my hands. Do you know how many rules I broke by telling you first? If anyone ever found out, my investigation would be compromised.
What investigation? What do you think you're going to find? Those girls killed themselves when... It's fucking sad. It's fucking horrible. But it's the fucking truth. It was suicide.
But what if it wasn't? My voice bounced off the walls. What if it wasn't, Griff?
You think my uncle killed them?
No, I don't, I admitted. To him? To myself? That doesn't mean I can ignore the questions. What if? What if it was your sister who you'd found on Indigo Ridge? What if it was Lila or Eloise or Talia? I cannot live with the what-ifs, not when I might have the power to erase them. He expelled the air from his lungs in a whoosh.
I'm not faulting you for the questions, just the manner.
I can't be a police officer for everyone in Quincy, but not for you. And if you actually took a step back, stopped acting like a stubborn mule, and remembered that I'm more than just the woman sharing your bed, you'd realize that what you are asking of me is impossible. That's not who I am, Griffin. That's not who you'd want me to be.
I'm not.
You are. I sighed. You are. He froze. Heartbeats passed. Any minute he'd walk out the door and out of my life. It hurt already to lose him. God, it hurt. Except he didn't leave me. His frame sagged and he tore off his baseball cap, sending it sailing across the room. Then he dragged a hand through his dark hair.
You're right.
The relief was so profound, I laughed. I know. He planted his fists on his hips.
I'm pissed.
Deal with it.
I will.
Griff's arm wrapped around my shoulders and he hauled me into his chest.
Sorry.
Maybe I should have fought for more than a one-word apology, but 2 seconds against his warm, strong body and I let it go. After Pops and his heart attack, 2 sleepless nights, and the discussion with Briggs, I didn't have the strength to argue with Griffin. So I wrapped my arms around his narrow waist and pressed my cheek against his heart and just breathed.
You have me twisted up, woman. So fucking twisted up.
Wanna unwind? Call it quits? He leaned away and his hands moved to my face, his fingers threading through the hair at my temples.
I don't think I could quit you if I tried.
Even if we fight?
Especially when we fight.
It wasn't a declaration of love. It wasn't a lifelong commitment. But that statement moved me so much that tears flooded my eyes. My parents used to fight. Mom had called it normal fighting. In high school, when all of my friends' parents were getting divorced, I'd fret and convince myself that my parents would too. One night, I'd overheard them arguing about something. The details had faded with time, but when my mom had found me in my room later that night, crying, she'd sat down on my bed and promised that the argument was normal fighting. She'd told me that one day she hoped I'd find a man who'd fight with me, who'd love me even when he wanted to strangle me, who'd never quit fighting because what we had was worth a few angry words. I don't want to quit either, I whispered.
Hey.
His thumbs caught the 2 tears that escaped.
You can't cry, Wynn. It destroys me. Don't cry, baby.
I sniffled away the sting in my nose. It's just been a long few days.
Lean on me.
He kissed my forehead, then hugged me again, squeezing so tight that if my knees buckled, I wouldn't drop an inch. I leaned on him, and for the first time in a long time, I knew the man holding me tight wouldn't let me fall.
Chapter 19. Griffin. What's funny? I asked. Wynn had been holding back giggles since we'd left the grocery store. Nothing. The twitch at the corner of her mouth said otherwise. Baby, spill it.
I've just never ridden in your truck.
Okay, I drawled, pulling to a stop in front of my house. Why's that funny?
Because it's filthy.
Her pretty laugh broke free.
You are the neatest, tidiest man I've ever met. If I leave a crumb on the counter, you sweep it up. I've never seen your hampers overflowing with dirty clothes. When you shave, there's not a whisker you don't rinse down the drain. But this truck...
I shrugged. It's a ranch truck. Keeping it clean was practically impossible. Working in the dirt all day meant I'd inevitably bring it in on my boots. The same was true with straw and hay. And most of the time, I preferred rolling the windows down to using the air conditioner. So, dust was a given.
I like that it's messy.
She unbuckled her seatbelt and leaned across the console, kissing the underside of my jaw.
It makes you real.
I'm as real as it gets for you, Winslow. I tucked a lock of hair behind her ear. Her dark blue eyes softened, and she leaned her cheek into my palm. Neither of us moved. We just sat there. Touching, our eyes locked as we soaked in the quiet moment. Still moments had been scarce these past 2 weeks. The topic of Briggs had mostly been avoided in that time. It was a raw subject for us both. Wynn had done what she'd needed to do. She'd been right to put me in my place. Mom and Dad had both taken her side, too. Yes, they'd called a lawyer, but neither had faulted her for asking Briggs some questions. Since then, she'd spent some time hiking around Indigo Ridge and the trails that led from the cliff to Briggs's cabin. She'd asked me first, giving me the same respect she would have any other landowner. Otherwise, she'd gone about doing what she needed to do while I'd focused on the ranch. We were in the thick of summer haying. The swathers and balers were running from sunup to sundown. The end of July was always a hectic time. We were constantly moving cattle herds from one pasture to the next to ensure the grass wasn't overgrazed during these hot summer days. Weeds had to be sprayed, equipment fixed. One of our tractors had broken down earlier this week, so I'd spent the better part of 2 days with our mechanic, both of us covered in grease, working to get it fixed. By the time I made it home each night, I was dead on my feet. Wynn had been busy at the station and spending time with Covey. She'd leave each morning, and the daily worry about her would settle in as an underlying current to the day. The distraction of work helped, but I wouldn't really breathe until she was here, under my roof, in my bed. I liked that my house was becoming her place. A few nights this week, she'd beat me home. I'd find her inside, shoes discarded by the door and wearing one of my t-shirts, her own uniform top usually on the floor beside the hamper instead of inside it. One night she'd been on the porch, drinking a glass of wine. Sooner rather than later, I wanted this to be her only sanctuary. Considering that the rest of her furniture had arrived at her house in town, but she hadn't unboxed it yet, I was taking it as a good sign.
"We'd better get these groceries inside," she said.
"Yeah." She leaned in for one more kiss, then climbed out. I met her at the tailgate, popping it open. As she looped plastic bags over her forearms, I did the same before following her inside. Then we came out for the second load since my fridge and pantry had been nearly bare.
"What's this?"
she asked, picking up the old hubcap Mateo had found weeks ago. "Trash. You know the place I bought by Indigo Ridge, across the road?"
"Yeah."
She dragged her finger across the word Jeep, indented into the metal. That guy had about 1 million old cars parked all over the place. Mateo found that along the road that leads to the ridge. I think I'll be finding rusted parts here and there for the rest of my life.
"Ah."
She tossed it deeper into the truck bed before grabbing the last bag. We worked together in the kitchen to unload. It was simple, boring and dull, but something about going to the grocery store together, pushing a cart up and down aisles, about moving in tandem through the kitchen, made me fall for her just a little bit more. Maybe because it felt like this space had been waiting for her all along.
"We bought all this food."
She stood at the open refrigerator.
"And I have no idea what I feel like eating for dinner."
I chuckled. "Steak and potatoes? I could grill."
"Perfect. What can I do?"
"Kiss the cook." She shut the fridge and walked over to where I stood against the counter, fitting herself against my chest. Her hands snaked around my waist, dipping beneath the hem of my shirt. The moment her palms flattened on the bare skin of my back, my mouth was on hers. Our tongues battled that delicious war. Seconds away from tearing her shirt off, I froze when I heard the front door open.
"Griffin, if your dick is out, this is your 5-second warning to put it away before the girls get here,"
Knox's voice carried down the hallway. I tore my mouth away from Wynn's, wiping it dry. "Go away." He ignored me, emerging from the entryway. When he strode into the kitchen, it was for Wynn.
"Hi, I'm Knox."
Wynn cleared her throat and stepped away, no longer shielding the bulge behind my zipper.
"Hi, I'm Winslow."
"Nice to meet you."
He shook her hand, then shot me a look.
"Finally."
The dinner date I'd promised her at the restaurant hadn't happened, partly because we'd been busy, partly because we both seemed content to lock ourselves away together.
"The girls are bringing dinner."
Knox went to the fridge and pulled out one of my beers.
"And I'm taking the rare evening not to be in charge of a meal."
"Wait," I held up a finger. "What dinner?"
"Mom said you were home and that she saw Winslow's car here, so we're invading."
He turned to Wynn.
"Making sure you know there's no hard feelings about the Briggs thing, and that the only one to get riled up about it was you."
Wynn's frame relaxed.
"Thank you."
"You're welcome."
Knox winked at her. I sighed, grateful for the show of support, even if I wasn't overly excited about a full house.
"So everyone's coming here?"
Knox shook his head.
Mom and Dad already had plans.
What if we had plans?
Did you?
Knox asked Wynne.
No,
she laughed.
Just dinner.
See?
He tipped his beer to me, then, after a drink, went back to the fridge to get me one.
Drink this and relax. Be grateful we've given you two this long.
I took the bottle, twisted off the top, and offered it to Wynne. You might need this.
The girls are bringing sangria,
Knox said.
Oh, I'll wait for that.
Wynne waved off my beer.
But,
Knox raised his eyebrows.
Eloise made the sangria.
I cringed. Baby, you'd better stick with beer, or I'll open a bottle of wine for you.
What's wrong with Eloise's sangria?
She asked. Mom likes to joke that she gifted us kids her cooking talent, except because she gave so much to Knox and Lila, by the time Eloise and Mateo were born, there was nothing left for them.
There's a chance the sangria might kill you,
Knox said. Wynne swiped the beer bottle from my hand. I went to the fridge for my own. The moment the top was off, the front door opened again, and the chatter of voices was like someone had found the house's volume dial and cranked it to the max. Christ, they are loud, Knox muttered. You don't get to complain, I shot him a glare. This was your idea.
Actually, it was mine.
Lila waltzed into the kitchen with three plastic containers, each a varying shade of green.
Hi, Winslow. Hi, Lila.
Wynne waved, and I was glad she was taking it in stride. Wynne was going to be a part of my life. No ifs, just facts. And my family invaded. It was their nature. Hell, I invaded too. Though usually it was by stopping to see them at work instead of showing up on their front doorstep. Talia and Eloise came in next, the former carrying a platter of preformed burger patties and the latter with a pitcher of sangria.
Hey, Wynne.
Talia set the burgers down, then rounded the island to pull Wynne into a hug.
How are you? How's Covey? I'm good, and he's feeling great. Slightly annoyed at the amount of vegetables I've introduced to his life. Good.
Talia let Wynne go, making space for Eloise, who also gave her a hug.
Hi, Wynne. Hi, Eloise. How's your hotel? Amazing.
My baby sister beamed.
Technically, it's Mom and Dad's hotel, but...
They'd be lost without you. I moved closer to pull her into a sideways hug. Hey, kid. Eloise's blue eyes sparkled as she smiled up at me.
Hey, big brother.
You doing okay? She nodded, relaxing into my side.
Just busy. You know how it is during the summers.
The Eloise Inn was the heart of Quincy, and Eloise was the heart of the inn. Eloise is my favorite sibling, I told Wynne. Wynne's eyes widened, looking to my other siblings.
Are you supposed to say that out loud?
We all have favorites, Knox chuckled. Lila is mine.
Griff is mine,
Lila said, popping the lid on one container, flooding the kitchen with a savory smell that made my stomach growl.
You all have favorites, really?
Wynne laughed, then pointed between the twins.
And you two aren't each other's? I love Lila most because we shared a womb,
Talia said.
But my favorite is Maddie.
Where is Mateo? I asked, keeping one arm around Eloise while the other tipped the beer bottle to my lips. On cue, the front door burst open.
Party's here.
He was in charge of beer. Knox came over and clapped a hand on my shoulder. Hope the sheets in the guest bedrooms are clean.
Hell, I tipped my face to the ceiling. So, not only were my siblings invading to have dinner, but they were also going to get drunk and sleep over. Now it made sense why Mom and Dad had opted to skip. They probably suspected this dinner would get rowdy. It did. Eloise convinced everyone to try her sangria, promising that no one would die. There'd been a lot of grimaces, but the pitcher was empty, and my sisters were hammered.
Let's build a fire,
Talia shoved out of her seat on the deck that overlooked the backyard. She staggered the first few steps toward the staircase that led to the fire pit.
Yes,
Lila cheered.
And do s'mores.
No, I shook my head. It's too dry for a fire.
You're no fun,
Eloise slurred from her chair beside mine. Her eyelids were barely open to slits.
Wynne, your boyfriend is a bummer,
she giggled from her seat on my lap.
He's not so bad.
No offense, Wynne,
Mateo said from his seat beside Eloise.
But your opinion doesn't count. You're the only one who will get to see Fun Griff tonight.
Ew,
Talia gagged.
Too far, Mateo.
Lila cringed.
Wynn buried her face in my shoulder and laughed.
Mateo, remember when Griff was the fun brother?
Eloise asked. Griff was never fun. Excuse me, I leaned forward to shoot him a glare. I bought you beer when you were underage. Mateo scoffed. When I was 20, 6 days before I turned 21, that's not fun. Wynn sat up straight.
Contributing to the delinquency of minors?
Don't listen. I covered her ears with my palms. You guys are fucking killing me tonight. Knox walked out from the house with two fresh beers, handing one to me. Sounds like you need this. Thanks, I muttered. I'm going to start locking the goddamn door. Wynn snuggled deeper, kissing my cheek.
You're having fun.
Yeah, I am. I grinned, holding her close as she yawned. The sun had set hours ago. The stars were putting on their nightly show, twinkling down from their throne in the midnight sky. I was beat. And even though tomorrow, today, was Sunday, my task list was long. But I didn't want to be anywhere else but in this chair with Wynn on my lap, listening as my brothers and sisters razzed me ruthlessly.
What else can we tell Wynn?
Lila asked. Nothing, I grumbled. You've done enough. Any embarrassing story from my life, they'd told it. Shitheads. What about that time he got caught freshman year with that girl under the bleachers at the football game? Mateo asked.
No thanks.
Wynn waved him off.
Let's skip that one, please.
That wasn't me, I said. That was Knox. And that was a fun night, Knox laughed. I lost my virginity that night.
Way too much information.
Eloise stood from her chair.
I need to go to bed.
I'll help. I nudged Wynn, both of us standing to help, because Eloise looked like she was 5 seconds from passing out. Where's everyone sleeping? Mateo asked. As they started debating who got which bedroom, I led Eloise inside with Wynn following. The entryway split my house in half with the kitchen at the back. In one half was the living room, the office, and the master. In the other, 3 guest bedrooms and 2 bathrooms. The architect I'd hired to design this place had made a joke once about the need for abundant bedrooms. We'd met in town to discuss blueprints, and during that lunch meeting, each one of my siblings and my parents had stopped over to offer their opinions. For years, I'd lived in the loft apartment above the barn at Mom and Dad's. It was where Mateo lived at the moment. But as I'd gotten older, it had been time to build my own house. Knowing that this was my forever home, I'd spent the money. I'd given myself plenty of space, not just for the family I might have, but for the one I already did. The first guest room had 3 twins, 2 bunked on top and 1 below beside a dresser. The walls were planked in a distressed barnwood, much like the siding that covered my actual barn. The gray and brown striations gave it enough character that I hadn't needed to buy art. I pulled back the blankets on a bottom bed, making space for Eloise to sink down.
I'll get her a glass of water.
Wynn slipped out while I helped my sister take off her shoes.
I love her, Griffin.
Eloise gave me a dreamy smile.
But when you marry her and have babies, don't get rid of my bunk beds.
Okay, I chuckled, tucking her in. Much like I'd tucked her in as a kid when I'd babysat for Mom and Dad to have a date night. Wynn returned with a glass of water.
Good night, Eloise. Night, Wynn.
I kissed my sister's forehead, then eased out of the room, hitting the light. Come on, baby. I took Wynn's hand and led her down the hallway, past the living room and kitchen, to our side of the house. The master bedroom's vaulted ceilings were lined with thick wooden beams like those in the living room. The fireplace in the corner of the bedroom had a floor-to-ceiling stone hearth. Large paned doors opened to the farthest end of the deck. My other siblings were still talking and laughing outside. The moment I closed the door behind us, Wynn began undoing the buttons of the flannel she'd stolen from the walk-in closet earlier when she'd gotten cold outside.
I'm beat, she said. I hope they don't care that we disappeared.
They won't. I took over for her, undoing the buttons. Then I eased the shirt off her shoulders, letting it pool at her feet. I forgot how this is.
What is?
Family gatherings.
You mean you forgot how loud and obnoxious they can be?
and wonderful and entertaining. I put my hands in her hair, kneading her scalp. Did you have these sort of nights with your parents?
We did.
She gave me a sad smile, her head lolling into my touch.
It was with their friends, since they didn't have siblings, but as a kid, they'd host summer barbecues and everyone would laugh for hours and hours, like tonight. This was fun. I needed it.
I'm glad.
Did you have fun?
I did, though some of those stories weren't exactly ones I wanted you to hear. She laughed.
You really streaked down Main Street with a gorilla mask over your head?
Yep, I muttered. Knox had told her all about how I'd lost a bet my senior year, and the price was a naked sprint down Main. Thankfully, there'd been no stipulation that I had to keep my head exposed, so I'd borrowed the mask from a buddy's Halloween costume stash. To this day, I don't think Mom knows it was me.
I want to be there the day she finds out.
My heart swelled. You will be.
Your family is incredible. You're lucky to have them.
I am. I nodded. It was too soon to declare they'd be hers, too. That tonight, each of my siblings had found a quiet moment, like Eloise had before falling asleep, to tell me they loved Wynn. They've claimed you now. She locked her eyes with mine.
Have they? And what about you?
Oh, I claimed you a long time ago. The night I'd met her at Willie's. I hadn't realized it at the time, but from that night on, she'd been mine.
What are we doing, Griffin?
I thought it was sort of obvious. Falling in love with her had been effortless.
Yeah,
she whispered.
I guess it is.
I opened my mouth to say the words, but hesitated. Not tonight. Not with my brothers and sisters outside, their laughter bouncing off the walls. Not when I hadn't taken her on a first date. The words would come in time. So I dropped my lips to hers, starting with a slow tangle. The heat built gradually, but with intensity, like the sun on a clear July day. With clothes stripped, with her bare skin against mine, we came together. One slick slide of my body into hers, and there was nothing to keep us apart. We didn't need the words. Her eyes locked with mine as her toes curled into my calves, as her body trembled beneath mine. We didn't need the words. For tonight, living them was enough.
Chapter 20. Winslow. I'm going to go hang out with Pops for a while today, I told Griffin as we ate breakfast at the kitchen island.
I've got to head up to the south side of the ranch where we've got some horses grazing and make sure the creek still has enough water for them. If it's too dry, and I suspect it's getting that way given how hot it's been all week, I'll have to move them closer to a spring. Want to come with me?
How long will it take?
Probably most of the day.
As wonderful as a Saturday spent with Griff on the ranch sounded, I hadn't spent enough time with Pops in the past 2 weeks, or at my own home. Since the night of the impromptu sibling dinner here, I hadn't gone to my house for anything but 5 minutes to grab the mail. I'd better skip this one. I need to go to the house and clean. It's dusty and stale. Maybe build that TV stand that's been sitting in the box.
Or...
Griffin set his fork down, twisting in his seat to face me.
You don't build the TV stand.
My television is on the floor.
But that one isn't.
He pointed over my shoulder to the flat screen mounted above the living room's fireplace. At some point, I'm going to want to watch TV at home and not have to sit on the floor so it's at eye level.
How many minutes have you watched TV at your place in the last month?
Zero.
Exactly.
But I already bought the stand. Why wouldn't I build it?
Because you don't need it.
Yes, I do.
Winslow.
My name, stated in a way that sounded like I was missing the point. Griffin.
You watch TV here. You sleep here. Your stuff's all over the bathroom and your clothes are covering the closet floor.
I need to do laundry.
Yeah, and when you do that laundry, it's going to be in the washer and dryer right down that hallway.
He nodded toward the laundry room. Do you not want me to use the washer and dryer?
No,
he chuckled, shaking his head.
It's yours, just like the bathroom's yours. The bedroom, the closet floor, this kitchen, that TV, this house is yours.
I blinked. Huh? He laughed again, fitting his wide palm to the nape of my neck.
Think it over. You want to keep your place in town for a while, that's fine by me. You want to get it listed before summer's over and the market has its seasonal dip? Then we'll get a hold of your realtor and bring the horse trailer to town to move everything out here.
My jaw hit the floor as he slid off his stool, kissed my forehead, and disappeared toward the bedroom, probably to find some socks so he could go on about his day. Did he just ask me to move in? To live here? Actually, no, he hadn't asked. There hadn't been a single question mixed in with his string of brain-scrambling statements. Did I want to move in? Yes. I loved this house. I loved the comfort that came with turning off the highway and onto his quiet gravel road. I loved sunsets on the porch and waking in Griffin's arms. But it was too soon, wasn't it? I'd lived with Skylar for years. I'd just separated my life from another man's. And I did love my little house in town. That cute, charming little house with the red door that I'd neglected for weeks and weeks. Griffin, his feet in socks, snuck up on me, still frozen on my stool. I waved him off when he reached for our plates. I'll clean up.
Okay.
He kissed my hair.
See you later. Dinner?
I nodded.
Have a good day, baby.
You too, I murmured, the words coming on autopilot. It wasn't until he was out the door and the rumble of his truck vanished that I shook myself out of my own head and loaded the dishwasher. Then I went to the bedroom and grabbed a load of laundry. I worked around the house for a couple of hours, waiting to transfer my clothes to the dryer. I dusted the living room. I vacuumed the bedrooms. I mopped the floors. Should I move in? Maybe that question was unnecessary. Every pair of panties I owned was beneath this roof. Most were in the hamper, or the vicinity of the hamper. But the others were stowed in a drawer in the closet. He'd given me three drawers, half of the dresser. The same was true in the bathroom. I cleaned. I brought groceries here after work. The Durango was parked out front whenever I was on duty and driving the station's Explorer. All that was missing was my mail in the mailbox. Except I knew that if this fell apart, I had a place to go. Deep down, maybe that was the problem. Maybe that was the reason I couldn't find myself immediately saying yes. Because he still hadn't said those critical three words. Neither had I. Each time he kissed me, each time he made love to me, I felt them. So why couldn't I give them a voice? By the time the dryer dinged and my clean clothes were in a drawer or hanging on a closet rod, I still wasn't sure what to do. So I headed into town to visit the man whose bear hugs always grounded my feet. Pops opened the front door to his house before I'd even shut off my Durango. When I stepped out, he held up a hand, halting my steps on the sidewalk.
Now I'm going to warn you right now, Winnie. I had bacon for breakfast. The house and my clothes reek of it. I know it's not on the diet plan, but dang it, I'm going to have it once a week. Maybe twice.
Okay, I laughed and walked into his outstretched arms. As expected, one hug and I was steadier. How are you feeling today?
Productive. Mowed the lawn this morning, picked up around the house. Now I get to relax with my best girl.
You'd better be talking about me. He chuckled, slinging an arm around my shoulders to bring me inside.
You know I am.
We settled on the back deck, watching the river flow. The lazy swirl, the lap of ripples along the banks, was as soothing as a sunset on Griff's porch. My porch. It could be my porch.
You look nice today,
Pop said. Really? I was in a simple white tank top, denim cutoffs, and tennis shoes.
It's not your clothes, sweetheart.
His eyes softened.
Are you happy here, in Quincy?
I am. Quincy agrees with me.
Or maybe it's Griffin.
Maybe. A smile tugged at my mouth. He asked me to move in with him.
Yeah, and what did you say?
Nothing. Yet. I'm not sure what to do. It's soon.
Psst, soon is relative.
I lived with Skylar for years. Don't you think I need to be on my own for a while?
Winnie, you might have lived with Skylar, but trust me when I say you were on your own.
I opened my mouth to argue, but the words died on my tongue. Pops was right. I'd lived with Skylar, we'd been engaged, and I had most definitely been on my own.
You two coexisted, Pop said. That's not the same as companionship.
I don't think I realized how lonely I was in Bozeman, I admitted, since Mom and Dad. And then I'd come here, and from the very first night, I'd had Griffin. He'd chased away that loneliness with such ferocity, I hadn't even realized how much I'd needed someone to burst into my life and shake it up.
You went through an awful ordeal,
he said. So did you. He reached over and put his hand over mine.
It's not the same.
For the first time in weeks, I thought about the crash. It had been, how long had it been? The last nightmare I could remember had been after the fourth. Weeks of peaceful sleep, and Griffin was the cause.
I made a decision yesterday.
Pops patted my knuckles.
Want you to be the first to know.
You're retiring, he nodded.
It's time. This little health blip put things in perspective.
A little blip? I rolled my eyes. You had a heart attack.
Minor.
A heart attack, minor or major, is not a blip.
Call it what you want, but it made me realize I'd rather spend the rest of my time without heartburn. I see these other old-timers sitting at Lila's shop each morning, talking about the weather and the gossip in town. I think that would suit me just fine.
You're going to get bored.
Guaranteed. I'll probably drive you crazy, stopping by unannounced, staying over uninvited.
I laughed. In that case, I fully support your retirement.
Good.
I'm proud of you, Pops. All you've done for Quincy.
You know, Winnie,
he sat a little straighter.
I'm proud of me, too. It's been a good run as mayor. A long, good run. But you have to promise me one thing.
Name it. He leaned in close.
The day you fire Tom Smith, you'll tell me first.
Deal. Well, I'll tell Tom Smith first, but you second.
Before Griff.
Before Griff. I winked. I hope whoever becomes my new boss is as great as you.
You're biased.
No, I'm not. In my short time here, Pops had given me the freedom to do my job. He was always there as a resource, but he didn't micromanage the station or demand to know what was happening with certain cases. I was sure that Frank had given Pops an earful about Briggs Eden, but Pops hadn't waded into the fray. He trusted me to do my job and make the right decision. Can I talk to you about something confidential while you're still my boss?
I'm all ears.
It's about Lily Green and Harmony Heart. I told him about the wallet and the purse, about how I'd found them at Briggs Eden's cabin and everything he'd told me when I'd brought him into the station last month. It was all information I hadn't wanted to burden him with after his heart attack. That and nothing else had come from my investigation. There were no more leads to follow, no more questions to ask. Gossip about Briggs had mostly faded away, too. There were no fingerprints besides those belonging to Briggs, I told him, not even the girl's prints, which leads me to believe that someone put them up there for Briggs to find.
Why?
I'm not sure. It had been bothering me for a month, but as I turned it around in my head, over and over, nothing made sense. I'd even called Cole and Bozeman to get my former partner's opinion on the case. Cole had been as stuck as I was, and without evidence, I was stuck. Maybe someone is trying to set Briggs up, I said, to tie him to both Lily and Harmony. That purse might just be a replica of Harmony's. Maybe it was Lily's. Without fingerprints, I wasn't sure. I'd tried to hunt down a recent purchase on Lily's credit card statements, but there was nothing that had shown her buying a leather purse. I'd even stopped by some shops downtown to see if they sold it, and no one had recognized it. If the purse was Lily's, it would explain why it was in such good shape, I said. Maybe she bought it and never showed it to her mother. And it would explain why it had been with the wallet. She might have dumped both before.
Poor kid.
Pops shook his head. There's one more option. Briggs might have been there the nights they died, and he took Harmony's purse and Lily's wallet.
And then left his trophies on a bookshelf for you to see.
Pops blew out a long breath.
It's a stretch.
Maybe he doesn't remember where he found them. Maybe he wasn't lucid.
For Lily, it's probable. From everything you've told me, he's slipping. But Harmony Heart died years ago. I don't think Briggs has been experiencing severe symptoms for long. Let me play devil's advocate. What if he was there? What if he had something to do with it?
I have no evidence. Speculation, however, I had in abundance. Someone could be setting him up. Someone who wanted me to think that he might have had a hand in their deaths.
Who?
I shrugged. The only person I've ever heard talk badly about him is Frank.
And that's all old drama.
Pops waved it off.
Frank's a good friend, but between me and you, he's always had a bone of contention with the Edens. It's jealousy, plain and simple. So take whatever he's told you with a grain of salt.
I have, I sighed. I feel like I've let these girls down.
You want answers?
Very much. For their families. I'm missing a piece. Had Lily left a suicide note or had there been a sign she was struggling, I might not feel like this. But as it stands, I can't let it go.
You need to.
Pops put his hand on my forearm.
I'm saying this as your boss. You've done everything you can to make sense of their deaths. But, Winnie, people go through dark times. You know this.
I do.
It doesn't always make sense.
You're right. My shoulders slumped. I was ready to put it away, to let it go. Then the person wallet showed up, and I just... Gah, I hate dead ends.
They exist in this world to torture people like you.
You're not wrong.
What's Griffin say about all of this?
Since our fight a month ago, Griff hadn't brought up Briggs other than to give me an update on what the doctors had found. Harrison had been taking him in regularly to meet with a specialist. There wasn't much they could do, but they'd enlisted him in a drug trial, and everyone was hopeful it would slow the dementia's progression. But it was early on, and that road was long. Griff knows I have a job to do, and he's respecting my position, I said.
Because he's a good man.
He is.
A heck of a lot better than Skylar.
Pop spewed the name with a lip curl. I thought you liked Skylar. He arched a white eyebrow.
No, he was never good enough for you. Your parents thought the same.
What? My mouth fell open. Mom and Dad had always been so nice to Skylar. They'd invited us over for regular dinners. They'd helped us move in together. Why do you say that?
He's an asshole.
Pops chuckled, his chest shaking.
We used to talk about him behind your back.
You did? I smacked his shoulder. Why didn't anyone tell me?
We all knew you'd figure it out eventually, though I think your dad was losing patience. When you got engaged, he about lost it. The pissant didn't even bother asking for his permission.
I couldn't believe I was hearing this. I stared unblinking at my grandpa's profile as he watched the river flow like he hadn't just dropped a bomb on my lap. My parents hadn't liked Skylar. If anyone but Pops had told me, I wouldn't believe it. But in a way, it made me feel better. That they'd landed on the same conclusion I had, though much earlier. Wow, I shook my head. And Griffin, is there anything you want to tell me now? Pops turned and gave me a sad smile.
They'd love Griffin.
I pressed a hand to my heart as my eyes flooded. Dad would have dropped everything to help me move my stuff into Griffin's house. Mom would have loved sitting on the porch to watch the sunset behind the mountains. I wish they could have met him, I whispered.
They did meet him.
What? When?
Oh, it had to have been years ago. They came to visit. You were busy working, so it was just them for a weekend. We all went down to Willie's for a drink. Harrison and Griffin were both there.
Griff didn't tell me.
The bar was packed, and he's not exactly unpopular. But I recall your mom made the comment that she wished you'd find a man like that. A sexy cowboy. Your dad teased her mercilessly for that. Said he was going to go home and buy a pair of boots to wear around the house naked.
Oh my God. I buried my face in my hands, torn between laughing and crying. Because that was so them. And the fact that they'd met Griff, just knowing they'd seen his face. I didn't know why it was important to me, but it was. Tears won out over the laughter, and as a few leaked down my face, Pops put his hand on my shoulder. I miss them.
Me too,
he said. Thanks for telling me.
We don't talk about them enough, sweetheart.
That's my fault. It had been too hard for too long.
I'd like to, if you're all right with it.
I nodded. I'd like that too, Pops. He squeezed my shoulder, then stood.
How about a snack? I'm hungry.
I can get it.
You stay.
The whoosh of the river was my soundtrack as I replayed my conversation with Pops. For too long, I'd held Mom and Dad close. I'd hoarded their memories. But we needed to bring them into our lives. Griffin might not have known them like Skylar, but that didn't mean he couldn't. Through my memories, he'd know them. Through my love for them, they'd be part of our future. Pops returned with a plate overflowing with red grapes, whole wheat crackers, and baby carrots, all things I'd brought him earlier this week.
Are you in a rush to head home?
He asked after the plate was empty. No, why?
How about a game of backgammon?
That would be fun. I hadn't played in ages, not since before Dad had died. Backgammon had been his favorite game to play with Pops. Then he'd taught me. Pops and I played for hours until the heat from the afternoon sun drove us inside to the dining room table where we played one last game.
That was fun,
he grinned as he put the board away. It sure was, but I'd better head home.
Whose home?
Griffin's, I corrected, wrapping my arms around his waist. Thanks, Pops.
Love you, sweetheart.
He hugged me tighter, then let me go.
Have a good night.
Love you too. Bye. We'd played longer than I'd expected, and by the time I got outside, it was close to dinner time. I pulled my personal phone from my pocket. The station phone was in the other, and though carrying two phones was a huge pain in the ass since Pops's heart attack, I hadn't gone anywhere without either fully charged. I was about to call Griffin and see if he wanted me to stop downtown and pick up something for dinner, but before I could unlock the screen, the clank of metal on metal carried from the house next door.
Hey, cutie,
Frank called from the garage. He was wearing a grease-stained pair of jeans. A red rag was hanging out of a front pocket. Hey, I stuffed my phone away and smiled, muffling a sigh when he waved me over. His attitude toward Griffin at the hospital still grated on me, but this was Frank. This was my grandpa's best friend and the guy who'd been there when I hadn't been to drive Pops to the hospital. How are you? I asked, stepping into the garage. The smell of metal and oil was so strong I scrunched up my nose.
Oh, fine.
He tossed out a hand to the Jeep.
This vehicle might be the death of me, especially if Rain keeps losing parts.
I laughed. How'd she lose parts?
Lord, if I had the answers to solve the mystery that is my beloved wife.
He laughed and kicked a tire with his boot. Frank! Oh, Winnie! Rain poked her head out the door that connected the house to the garage, and when she saw me, she rushed out, coming my way to pull me into a hug. She wore an apron tied tight and was holding a meat tenderizer. Hey, Rain. I'd seen her a few times since I'd moved to Quincy, each on my trips coming and going to visit Pops. She was one of those lucky women who didn't seem to age. Her hair was the same light brown as I always remembered, her skin smooth except for a few fine lines around her eyes and mouth. Her hug was as fierce as those I remembered from my childhood. Mom had always joked that for a slender woman, Rain was as strong as an ox. Are you cooking? I nodded to the tenderizer mallet. I am, she shook it and laughed. Chicken fried steak, Frank's favorite. How are you, little bird? Good. I smiled at the same nickname she'd called me since I was a kid. Frank was just telling me about a few missing parts for the Jeep. Did you go wild cleaning the garage? Never, she laughed. This is his mess. Then how'd you lose a part? I asked.
Driving, Frank answered. Somehow this summer she lost a hubcap.
A hubcap? The tire he'd kicked was missing the cap. My eyes darted to the front wheel. It was capped with the hubcap I'd seen in the back of Griffin's truck weeks ago on a grocery store run, the one he'd told me Mateo had found on the road to Indigo Ridge. I saw a hubcap like this. I locked my gaze with Rain's. I didn't realize that you drove the Jeep. Her smile faltered. Well, sure, it's my only car. Why would she go on the road to Indigo Ridge? That was private property. Something prickled at the back of my neck, an uneasy feeling. I didn't need a mirror to see the color drain from my face. Rain must have noticed it too. Frank, close the door. It took me 3 seconds too many to register that sentence. It took me 3 seconds too many to look between my lifelong friends and realize what I was seeing. Because in those 3 seconds, Frank punched the garage door opener clipped to the Jeep's driver's side visor, and Rain lifted the mallet. It took me 3 seconds too many to shed my personal bias and grasp that these people, neighbors, friends, were not as they seemed. 3 seconds too many before the lights went out.
Chapter 21. Griffin.
Hi, you've reached Winslow Covington. Please leave a message and I'll return your call as soon as possible. If this is an emergency, please hang up and dial 911.
I growled at the voicemail greeting, checking the time again. 7:48. The summer nights were long in Montana, and the daylight would last for almost another hour, but it was getting late. She'd missed dinner. She had agreed to dinner, right? I'd left her shell-shocked this morning, but Wynne wasn't one to ditch without a phone call first. For the past hour, I'd assumed that something had happened at the station. Maybe an accident, or an officer who'd called in sick. But as the minutes wore on, and she still hadn't returned my calls, the churning in my stomach was becoming unbearable. I pulled up Covey's number and called it for the third time. 4 rings, and it dropped to his voicemail. Shit. Bad news traveled at the speed of light around Quincy. If there'd been an accident or something else significant, someone in my family might have heard about it. So I started with the most likely source of news. Dad.
Hello, he answered.
Hey, it's me.
Hi, how'd the creek look today?
Dry. Moved the horses down. All good. Listen, have you heard about anything happening in town today?
No. Why? What happened?
Nothing, I sighed. Wynne isn't home, and she's not answering. I wasn't sure if something came up, and I hadn't heard about it yet.
No news here. Want me to make some calls?
No, not yet. If Dad started calling his buddies, there'd be rumor of an emergency before there was an actual emergency.
Okay, keep me posted.
I will, thanks.
Call Eloise, he said. If there's something going on, she'll know before the rest of us.
Good idea. Bye, Dad. The moment the line went quiet, I called my sister and asked her the same question.
I've been at the front desk all evening,
she said.
There hasn't been anything going on that I've seen.
And if there'd been a streak of cruisers blazing down Main with their lights flashing, she'd have noticed. Okay, thanks.
You're worried.
Yeah, I am.
I'm going to make some calls.
No, not. Before I could finish, she'd hung up on me. Damn it. There was no stopping Eloise. And if I knew my father, he was on the horn at the moment, too. If Wynne was just out and about, she wasn't going to like being hunted down. Then she needs to answer her fucking phone, I muttered, hitting the number to her personal phone again. It rang and rang. Wynne had been good about keeping it close and charged since Covey's heart attack. But when it transferred to voicemail for the 10th time since I'd called, I hung up and paced the kitchen. She's okay. This was probably just part of her job. A random, purposeful disappearance when she was too busy to answer my call. Chances were, she was dealing with something important, and my constant calls had been a distraction. But damn it, I was coming out of my skin here. We were going to have to come up with a system or something, a text, anything for her to signal she was all right. There was no way she'd give up being a cop. There was no way I wouldn't worry. Fuck it. I swiped my keys and ball cap from the counter and headed for the door. She was probably at her place, building that goddamn TV stand and freaking out about moving in. Yes, it was soon for this big of a step, but my feelings for her weren't going to change. So why not live under the same roof? She was practically living here already. She'd cleaned the house today, and the scent of furniture polish clung to the air. Bleach lingered in the bathrooms. Maybe I could have asked, said it more eloquently, but ignoring my calls wasn't the way. Was a text too much to ask for? The trip to town took too long. I called each of her numbers 2 more times. My chest was too tight, my heart beating too fast. The sinking feeling in my stomach plunged to the floorboards when I turned down her street
and her driveway was empty. Every window on the house was dark. Damn it, Wynn. I didn't bother stopping at the house, but simply hit the accelerator and headed around the block. The station was my next stop, but her Durango wasn't parked in her reserved spot. I didn't bother going inside, either. I'd call there next, but first I wanted to check with Covey, so I steered myself toward the river. Covey's street was as quiet as Wynn's, and my heart climbed out of my throat when I spotted her car parked outside his place. Oh, thank fuck. Christ, I'd about lost my shit. I hopped out of my truck and forced myself not to jog to his door. The doorbell got punched, not pressed, because as my blood pressure returned to normal, anxiety was replaced with anger. There was no reason she shouldn't have answered. Covey, too. When his footsteps sounded from beyond the threshold, I was practically shaking as he flipped the locks. Except, if she was inside, why was the deadbolt on? Griffin? Covey cocked his head. What are you doing here? She wasn't inside. Fuck. Is it Winnie? He asked, the color draining from his face. She's not home. I tried calling you.
I fell asleep with the TV on. She left here hours ago to meet you for dinner.
He looked past my shoulder to her Durango.
I didn't realize her car was still here.
Have you heard anything from the station? Was there an accident or something?
Not that I've heard. You've called her?
About 100 times. I dragged my hand through my hair. It was probably nothing, but every cell in my body vibrated that something was wrong.
Let me call the station.
Covey waved me inside, leaving me in the entryway as he rushed to the living room. The lamp beside his recliner was the only light on in the house. The TV was muted on the movie he'd been watching. His free hand trembled as he made the call.
Hi, this is Walter. I'm looking for Winslow. Is she at the station or out on a call?
Say yes. The panic in his gaze made my knees shake.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
He ended the call and shook his head.
She's not there. Mitch is going to ask around and call me back.
I'm going to keep looking. Maybe she'd gone for a walk. Maybe she'd been at the river and slipped. If her phones were wet, that would explain why she hadn't called.
I'll come with you.
Covey followed me to the door, stepping into a pair of tennis shoes. The darkness was coming faster than I liked. Would she have walked somewhere, maybe bumped into someone who needed help?
I don't know,
Covey said, following me down the sidewalk. We were feet away from my truck when a loud crash came from next door. Our faces whipped to the Nigel house.
What the?
Covey held up a finger.
Let me check on Frank.
We didn't have time to worry about fucking Frank.
Covey, 2 seconds. Maybe he saw her leave.
Fine, I grumbled, following him across the lawn that separated their homes. The garage door was open, but the lights were off. Frank sat on the concrete floor, one knee bent, the other leg straight, and his foot tipped to the side like he didn't have the strength to keep it upright. His back was against a tool bench, his face hidden in the shadows of the dark space.
Frank?
Covey hurried toward his friend, bending low.
What's going on? Are you hurt?
Frank shook his head, his glassy eyes rolling more than blinking as he cast a glare my direction.
Get out, Eden.
Are you drunk?
Covey stood and frowned.
We're looking for Winnie. Have you seen her?
This is his fault.
Was he talking to me?
Excuse me? I hate you.
The feeling is mutual. Now answer Covey's question. Have you seen Winslow?
Winnie?
His expression went from cold and furious to sad and apologetic in a blink. He dropped his eyes to his lap.
Oh, God. Hey.
Covey dropped to a crouch, putting a hand on Frank's arm to give it a shake.
What's going on?
Frank's shoulders curled in.
It was just for fun, Walter. It was never serious. What was fun?
Covey asked him. We're wasting time. I wanted out of this goddamn garage. We should be searching for Wynn, not listening to this asshole's drunken babble.
1 minute, Griffin.
Covey held up a finger.
Frank, what are you talking about? Do you know where Winnie is?
You need to understand, Walter.
Frank straightened in a flash, grasping Covey's forearms and holding him in place. I took a step forward, the hairs on the back of my neck standing up.
Understand what?
Covey asked him.
It was sex. Only sex. You know I like sex.
Sex. With who? My frame locked, my hands balled into fists. If Frank had so much as touched a hair on Wynn's head, they'd never find his fucking body.
What are you talking about, Frank?
Covey's calm voice was a stark contrast to the fury that raged through my veins. I clamped my molars together to keep quiet. Frank wouldn't say a goddamn word to me. Maybe if we were lucky, he'd forget I was standing here, because all that mattered was Wynn.
The girls,
Frank whispered. My heart lurched. The girls. There was no question who he was referring to. I knew deep in my soul exactly which girls he meant. Lily Green. Harmony Heart. Where the fuck was my Wynn? Frank, Covey pulled his arms free of his neighbor's hands, then in a swift motion, moving faster than any man that age should be able to move, he was on his feet, hauling Frank up with him.